Hello, you're listening to the Hamerty Brothers e-commerce podcast. If some of our discussions and tips are working for you, why don't you grab a 15-minute call with us at ecommercecall.com. We'll see whether we can help scale your e-commerce business. We will quickly see if we're a fit or whether we can recommend someone else to get you where you need to go. The worst case is you'll have a fun 15-minute chat, and regardless, you'll come away understanding a lot more about your business. Book a call at ecommercecall.com. Hello and welcome to the Hamerty Brothers e-commerce podcast. This week, we're interviewing Colin Neal. Colin Neal is the Senior Vice President of Adyen. And Adyen is a payment processor that processes billions and billions of dollars worth of payments around the world. So with a focus on e-commerce, we wanted to talk about the friction points and how to actually get through the order and make sure there's no friction points in your checkout. So let's get started. Welcome, Colin, your first guest on the podcast.
Thank you. Yeah, really nice to be here today.
So, Colin, just briefly, could you just give everyone a bit of a background of your how you got into e-commerce and where you are now?
Yeah, so, I guess the easy thing to think about when you think about myself is I've been in the retail sector for the last 30 years. Variety of different retailers. My last retailer that I worked in was the Burberry Group, and that's kind of where I met Adyen. So I picked up kind of working with payment providers around 2013, and kind of how come I've transitioned from there to here, because, you know, from the outside looking in, it's a very different environment. One of the things I learned during my time at Burberry was around the importance and the contribution that payments fundamentally make in the customer journey. And for large organizations like Burberry themselves, one of the challenges they had was that their landscape was very complicated, global business, variety of different customer touch points, either e-commerce or in bricks and mortar stores, serviced by different payment providers. And that led to not only real complexity in the back end, but real difficulty in ensuring you had a consistent customer experience. So we put the whole global payment business up to tender. That's where we met Adyen. And I guess the thing that was really clear to me through working with Adyen as a retailer was that Adyen had a very different way of approaching the world of payment and spoke to us more around customer and conversion and the quality of data and the capability to think in terms of one channel, not multiple channels, which led us to onboard Adyen. And obviously that relationship's still there and going really well. And, you know, convinced me to kind of make a move where I could see a business that was so forward-thinking, really exciting and genuinely making a difference in the whole unified commerce space.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. We were talking earlier about how the payments, and I totally agree with you, Colin, that the payments now are influencing the customer journey far more than they were. And if just to put it into the framework, so obviously everyone who listens to our podcast will know our framework of how we break down conversion. Conversion we break down into add to basket, basket to checkout, and checkout to order. And typically we say that on average, you know, 10% should add to basket, 55 should go from the basket to the checkout, and then when they're in the checkout, 85% should buy. And historically, going back over probably, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, the payment method would really only influence that final step of the conversion rate, which would be the checkout to order stat. And it was one of the most robust stats anyway, that by the time people got into the checkout, they were very likely to buy. Anyway, even if it was a really poor experience, they would still get the credit card out and they would still do it. And now we're seeing that the payment providers are influencing the add to basket stat, the basket to checkout, and the checkout to order as well. So it's becoming, like you say, much more integral to the whole buying journey. And there's certain types of payment that have done really well. I mean, people like ASOS and have sort of launching, you know, the different types of payment methods. And I think, and as people are going towards the mobile, being able to pay straight from the actual product page as well. Mm. So I think that's really exciting. And it never, you'd never would have known that there'd be so much technological advancements in it, that it would really influence that. So it's really quite cool and exciting.
Yeah, and I think one of the interesting things that's kind of happening in that space at the moment is, time is really precious. So as commerce moves and becomes more and more mobile, and commerce itself becomes a social activity, buying inside of those social arenas and those social environments, there's a real challenge to understand where you sit payments and how payments work. But one of the things that we consistently see is that the payment experience itself needs to be invisible, it needs to be quick, and it needs to be really relevant. So as more and more companies grow internationally, as more and more companies try to understand how they bridge that gap between online and offline, payments will become more and more important, and banks will be challenged. Banks will be challenged because they sit on large old legacy platforms, and quite often multiple platforms. That means that they're not able to respond to changes in consumer behaviour. So, Apple Pay is a really good example of a convenient, quick way of paying. The rise of the Chinese shopper using digital wallets across the UK when they visit the UK, being able to respond to the customer's preferred, trusted methods of payment will drive conversion. And you're seeing more and more things like Amazon Pay becoming more prevalent in the market, where you can move the positioning of Amazon Pay up into your checkout, so that what you don't have to do is worry about things like entering delivery details, because you can take those from your Amazon wallet. Things like that, in terms of how payment now eases the purchase experience, are fundamentally important.
So it's giving people a lot more ability to buy. If you get Chinese people coming to your site, then in the UK they would never have bought before, and suddenly you've got this whole audience that you can sell to, isn't it? It's just straight away, because they've got, a lot of them have like money on their phones rather than an actual bank account.
And I think one of the things that's really interesting is, if you look at, I think WeChat is a really good example, where I guess in the UK, if you think about the UK, we're still broadly used to hitting a retailer's website and purchasing inside of the retailer's website, or visiting a bricks and mortar store. But if you consider WeChat is essentially a whole system, social environment, where Chinese, especially the young Chinese, they spend significant amount of time in that system, where they're communicating with one another, they're networking, they're looking at products. And one of the things that we're beginning to see is that UK retailers are starting to look at what we call WeChat mini programs as an entirely separate channel, where they can engage with Chinese shoppers inside of a completely different format, a completely different language channel that they're used to doing, where they can have shop within shop. And it's that social aspect to consumerism now that said, actually, how do you respond to that social aspect, and where does payment sit inside that? And we're starting to see a number of UK retailers who are standing up that new channel that said, actually, there's a revenue stream there that we can optimize that actually meets the needs of how those consumers interact with brands and want to pay when they interact with those brands.
Mm-hmm. I think it's interesting. So having a flexible payment method that people are familiar with.
I think the interesting thing when we talk about flexible payment methods, is that we look at it from a consumer conversion perspective, but I think you can flip that on its head and think of it another way, in that payment methods, but there have always been payment methods available for retailers to take to make sure that they are relevant to consumers. The challenge has always been is that their payment provider may not be able to offer the relevant method, and therefore retailers need to make decisions around, do we have to invest into a new integration to allow us to deliver A, B, or C, whatever that method may be? And then you get pushback from finance, because they then take separate settlement flows, and they can't integrate all the different settlement flows into whatever their core ERP or finance system needs to be. And it just makes the whole backend complicated. So quite often you see retailers talking about, actually, especially when we look at retailers based around Manchester. Manchester at the moment, a really, really rapid, exciting growth area of the UK, especially when it comes to pure e-commerce retailers looking to expand outside of the UK, especially into Europe. And their biggest challenge is around how do we make it really easy for ourselves to add different currencies and different payment methods without convoluting the processes that you don't see behind the scenes. And that's where we kind of really pride ourselves to say that, you know, what we do is we do the heavy lifting for you, so that payment methods themselves, you just configure. You, there's no more integration. You choose to switch them on as and when you want them. You can switch them on to test, switch them off. It's entirely up to you. But that's kind of that's what a good payment service provider should be doing. They should be taking the thought and the complexity and the work away from the retailer, so they can focus on the things that really matter, which is obviously the product, the customer, and conversion.
Yeah, and I suppose you want to future-proof yourself, don't you? You want to future-proof yourself. So if something does take off, you don't have to go and completely rip out all your architecture and start again at that point, because it's going to be really busy.
Yeah, that's right. And I think, you know, we often talk about one of our strengths, and one of the things we always kind of pride ourselves on is speed. So we've got to be able to understand what is happening in the market, and we have to be able to respond to that. So that can mean two things fundamentally. That can mean making sure that we're always first with new product. So things like 3D Secure, 3D Secure 2, first release as part of PSD 2. But you also need to think about what does it mean for the retailer and the retailer stack, because the retailers are endeavouring to become agile, and what they can't afford to do is have a payment service provider that's not agile. And that's where I think the balance is swinging, as we've said earlier in the call, is that the balance is swinging away from banks that are just not agile, or add and layer complexity in the operations they try to respond to the ever-changing need of the consumer, to payment companies that are actually tech-first, and those tech-first companies allow retailers to add agility into their organisation.
Yeah, totally. I think what I think is really interesting is how having certain payment methods helps with the conversion, but also it helps with the lifetime customer value, so that I think people like ASOS, for example, with their Apple Pay, you know, is a real big hook to get people to come back, because it's just so easy, you know. And I think you often find that you people will find a product and then try and go, oh, I wonder if this is on ASOS, because it's just got Apple Pay, because it's so straightforward.
I bet you do that on Amazon yourself, though, right? You find a product and you think, actually, I'll just check Amazon, because if Amazon have it, it's easy. It's two clicks and I'm done.
I know. And sometimes even if it's more expensive, you know, because it's just so convenient. You've got to, technology has to make things more convenient. You know, that's what people want. They want, you know, speed and convenience will always win over anything else.
In a payment world, that's fundamentally important, because if you think about it, even when you go to Amazon, you're not shopping on Amazon because Amazon has a great checkout experience. You're shopping on Amazon because the whole experience is convenient. The whole shopping experience is convenient. So what you have to make sure is that payment doesn't add friction into that. So payment is one element. People don't go on the website because they think it has a good payment experience. That's not what drives traffic, but what a poor payment experience can do is it can kill your conversion and drop out, and that's the bit we need to make sure that we support retailers with.
Yeah, and I think it really affects the lifetime customer value, so the repeat purchase too, you know, if they have it, because like you say, they're not going to buy something for the first time just because you have a payment method, but I think from a second time, I think you might, if you really had a struggled experience, it really does affect that lifetime customer value as well.
No, it does, and especially in the e-commerce world, where, you know, we have the benefit in the e-commerce space that, you know, you can save cards on a platform and you can continually use those save cards. And it's about how do we leverage the strength of the platform to ensure that things like save cards never expire, so that you don't then get that dropout at the end of the process. Yeah. So it's all of those things in the end-to-end value chain that are really important to us in order to continually drive conversion.
One of the things that we love, I mean, essentially, we're after things that can influence our our main KPIs that we talk about all the time. And one of the KPIs is the average order value. And what we're interested in is now is how the technology is allowing us to do post-purchase upsells. So essentially what we mean by that is, you know, you make the main sale, and then on the order confirmation page, we're saying, there's another chance to buy, and you don't have to then go through the whole process of going and putting your credit card information in. And that's really exciting, because that would manifest itself in a higher average order value. Because we find that when people have bought, they are very likely to buy again very quickly. Because they've gone through the process of trusting the site. And it's example, let's say you buy, a lamp, a table lamp for your house. You know, we know that you're in the mode to buy, you're trying to make your house look better. You know, maybe you're trying to sell it, or you've got a dinner party or whatever it is, but you've got this short window where you're interested in doing up your house. So that's why the post-purchase emails work really, really well. And that's when, that's why I think the technology, the payment providers, to actually allow them a chance, even on the order confirmation email, to say, oh, you know, these are the things that you looked at that you didn't buy, or actually, you know, we'll give you a deal. If you, these are the things that other people bought, and actually, if you buy it, come back, we'll add it to your same order. We don't have your credit card information. Off we go, just to make it super easy. I think that's really exciting. And that never would have been possible 5 years ago.
No, and I think, I mean, there's been lots of advancements in that space, but fundamentally, customers saving card on file in the e-commerce space, in your e-commerce web shop, or that token, as we call it, having that recurring contract to sit against that token allows you to do a number of things. So it allows you to think about how you control the fraud aspects of the transaction, because if the first transaction that you're talking about triggers the need to have a tech like 3D Secure, what that's giving you, the retailer, is confidence. It said, you know, you're not going to get a charge back. It's a genuine customer. We've authenticated who that customer is, and now we've saved a token against that card. And actually what we can do is we can now use that token for future purchase, which reduces the friction to that transaction. And it's just having that ability to say, actually, how do you now want to optimize that token? How do you want to keep the token up to date? And we're seeing significant movement in the strength of that customer saved card or token, and we've started testing what we call network tokens, where you shop on a website, for example, for the first time, and when we tokenize your card, we reach out to the issuers and we understand the issues and the schemes and understand whether there's a network token being created by the scheme themselves, and if we do, we return that network token, which all sounds great technically, but what does it really mean? What it really means is that if you're a retailer and you've got a payment service provider who's saving a card on file for a customer with a token that has been generated by the networks themselves, the confidence that the issuing bank has to authorize that transaction substantially increases. And what that therefore means is that you don't see that dropout because your authorization rates move. Mm. And as we all know, 0.5% improvement, for example, on an authorization rate for a multi-million pound retailer is an awful lot of money for actually doing nothing.
Yeah, it's so important. I mean, we always say to that, particularly, you know, some channels, some industries are harder. So we've worked with a couple of clients that sell baby products to new women, pregnant women. And you know, you just picture this, you know, they're lying on the sofa and they've all got the mobile phone out, and if they have to go through this arduous process to fill in their credit card details and go through this authentication system, it's like asking them to go over to the other side of the room and do, you know, 50 press-ups. You know, it's just, oh god, they're just not going to do it. So it's to make it as seamless as possible really, really does help with those demographics.
Yeah, no, it really does. But I mean, even yourself, right? You know, how often have you been sitting downstairs wanted to buy something on your phone and then realise your credit card's upstairs and you don't want to go upstairs because you can't remember your last three digits on the back of your card. And what you find is you get to the end of that checkout and there's a huge relief that says, oh, thank God for that, they've got Apple Pay, and you take that complexity away.
Yeah, it's massive. Really interesting to know the stats of it. So what we're interested in is that checkout to order stat.
And what kind of things, when you're looking at checkout to order stat, what kind of things do you look at in terms of influencing that movement?
We tend to look at, I tend to look at the time on the checkout. So I've got kind of a benchmark for the time on the checkout page to see whether or not that is slow or quick. So I think if I remember rightly, about like if someone's buying, so you're in Google Analytics and someone's going to buy, typically the buyers seem to take between 10 and 16 minutes to buy. And if they're on the checkout page for more than 3 minutes during that process, then that usually means there's a bit of friction on the checkout page. So we try and basically benchmark it, look at the checkout to see whether they are getting through it in a fast way. So are they being able to add the ad address really quickly? And, and then if we do find a problem in the checkout, we then start to put in what we call Google Analytics events, so that as people move through that checkout page, we can see exactly how far they get and, you know, how much time they're spending on each item. And obviously looking at things like mouse flow and stuff like that. So very much kind of like really looking for that friction on the checkout page.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's fundamentally important. And I think for us, one of the really important things around checkout from a retailer's perspective, you never see our name. We work behind the scenes. We're not evident on any retailer's checkout, and nor should we be. Checkout, it needs to be two things, really. It needs to be, and it needs to look like a continuation of the customer journey. So you should never, ever see a separately branded page. Checkout should be fully configurable by the retailer themselves, so they can decide the look and feel. And the other thing that we don't actively want retailers to do any longer is do redirect payments. So certain payment methods, you have no choice, because if it's the likes of a bank transfer, you have to go out to the bank and come back. But for card payments, going onto a hosted payment page, they're just completely unacceptable. And the number that, and what I mean by unacceptable is that really that shouldn't be a retailer's first recourse in order to just implement a payment strategy. Because if it does, they're not really thinking about the journey in the way that you or I would think about the journey. And they're just thinking about payment, commodity, customer needs to pay, will move them to this page. And actually what they're ignoring is the fact that actually hosted payment pages, they don't retain any of your saved information. You are going to have to go through this uncomfortable cycle every time. And they're generally not form factored particularly well. So you tend to find real issues with seeing the screen, entering your details. And that, for me, as a shopper myself, you just end up suspending the page and walking away.
I see that quite a lot. When I do go into MouseFlow, a lot of times, a lot of the errors I do see is kind of like, you know, non-authentication, and errors come popping up all over the place. And it's very difficult to kind of diagnose those, because, you know, you'll get a little error message, but you won't really know what happened. Because obviously there's privacy on the MouseFlow. You can't see what people are actually doing once they go into that side of things. And so therefore, you kind of like, you know, something's wrong, but you don't know what's wrong. So it's very difficult to fix.
Yeah, and I think a lot of them are, a lot of the old payment, I mean, I don't want to name names, but there's some really old dinosaurs. I mean, you know, a lot of people on Magento went with a particular company, and you know, trying to use it on a mobile, you know, it was like an iframe method, and you know, half the form's chopped off, you know, and you can't, it's just so poor. And then what happens is people're so resilient, they really try to go through this horrible check. And like you say, it's a relief when you get to the end where it's paid.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that is such a poor experience. And you spend so much money with UX testing and, you know, add to basket stats, and then you've got this awful iframe that doesn't work on a tablet or a mobile or you know, it's taking you off to a separate site. And then, like you say, the form is just a horrible process to fill in. It doesn't know remember anything, and you've got to go through the whole process. And it's a horrible experience. And it's unnecessary, isn't it? It doesn't need to be like that.
No, it doesn't. And I guess there's a load of things in there, right? It doesn't need to be like that. And more often than not, that tells you about the retailer and the retailer's view of where payments sit in terms of their priorities. But the capability to really address that journey, you know, you touched on quite a lot of things there, but you know, how you use fraud solutions and how you use authentication solutions like 3D Secure, they don't have to be seen as an obstacle to conversion. You know, things like facial and biometric recognition technology will increasingly be used as more and more issuers embrace 3DS2 as we move forward. And what you're going to see is slicker, faster ways for shoppers to authenticate themselves, especially when they're on devices like iPhones or Android phones. They're going to be able to do that better, seamless way. But the other bit you mentioned, which I also think is interesting, is when it does go wrong, it's really important that you explain to the shopper what's happened. And that really is to do with the capability of the payment service provider to actually provide quality data back. So if you think of kind of the end-to-end chain, at the point that a request to pay hits your bank, if it doesn't work, your bank will tell you exactly why. The problem is that if you've got lots of different parties involved in the flow before it actually hits back onto the customers, onto the screen of the customer on their phone, quite often those messages get diluted or bundled together, and it's not really helpful. So for us, it's really important.
Chinese whispers.
It's just really important we give the right messaging back, you know. So, you know, if somebody's got insufficient funds in their account, they need to know that. If somebody's put the incorrect PIN, we need to tell them that. If somebody didn't pass an authentication check for a reason, we need to explain why, because that allows you to potentially recover the customer journey. So it's those pieces that are fundamentally important.
And it's, you know, I agree with all of this. And I think we always, whenever we're trying to explain how, you know, a complicated e-commerce stat, you know, we always say, well, imagine if your online shop was a physical bricks and mortar retail store. And what you'd see, you know, you'd see someone at the till with the credit card out, trying to use the, you know, the PIN machine. It's not working, and they're in a rush, and they've got, oh my God, there's a queue of people behind them, and they're getting panicky, and it's getting so frustrating. God's sake, why isn't this bloody thing, you know? And if you could see the experience your shoppers would have, you'd be absolutely alarmed, you know. And of course. It's not just frustrating, but of course it will affect the conversion, the customer loyalty, their feedback, their the way that they will review you. You know, it's really affecting monetary, and it is not a commodity, is it? I think people think payment providers it's like a commodity thing. I just want the cheapest possible transaction fee, which is absolutely bonkers, isn't it?
No, it is. I mean, the analogy of comparing it to a store, you know, is quite fitting. So, you know, a retailer would instantly do something about the fact that, you know, the shelves weren't full of stock, because shelves not full of stock mean, you know, people can't buy. But you know, if your security controls are too tight and you were turning away good shoppers on your checkout, the same way that your security gates were shut, your front doors were shut to your store, you weren't letting good customers in. That analogy goes through, but you look at it. You look at Asia market. Asia market is a fantastic market to look at. If you ever go to Asia and you walk around some of the stores in Asia, you see several, multiple credit card terminals sitting on a countertop next to the till, because each one takes a different card type because they can't consolidate them together. And we still see that in the UK. So it's about kind of thinking about, well, you need to make that shopper journey easy, and you need to give it the same prioritization as you would around your product and around opening the doors of your store.
Yeah, definitely.
One thing was, one so thing what I've sort seen of? A lot, sorry,
go on,
you go ahead, Ian.
Oh, okay. No, it's fine.
Well, basically, one thing I'm seeing a lot in the most recent consultancy projects I've been running, and it's also the clients, is that whilst mobile traffic is still increasing a little bit, it's nowhere near increasing as much as it was. But the revenue coming through the mobile channel is massively increasing over the past couple of years. So whereas I think what people were doing before was researching on their mobile and then buying ultimately on the desktop, they're now buying on their mobile a huge amount more, and therefore some of the clients that don't have very good mobile checkouts are suffering a lot more than they did. So that is that a trend you're seeing across everywhere, or is it just specific to these e-commerce sites I'm looking at?
No, I think mobile conversion and basket value is definitely increasing, and I think there's a host of factors. There's a host of factors that contribute to that. Technology on mobile devices is getting better. Checkout capability is getting better. Actually, more and more people own larger devices. Devices have got better form factor. So, you know, researching a product online works in certain sectors. In other sectors, it doesn't work particularly well if the form factor is wrong. So things like fashion sector, you know, you might need to be able to see the product. But actually, if you look technically, what's now possible in comparison to a number of years ago is that while people are still buying on their mobile sites, technology allows people to, you know, watch videos, zoom in really close to the product itself. And you know, payment technology has got to complement the way that you know the technology is moving forward in the digital space to allow customers to engage with product.
And I think also, you know, people like us now have been working in mobile for such a long time that we now know how a mobile site works and how it fits and how it looks like and how to make it work on a mobile. Whereas, you know, 5 years ago, mobile was growing, but we were like, well, how do you optimize a mobile site? And there is clear ways to set it out and how people use it. And obviously Apple have been, you know, they've led the way with how images work and things like that. And there's a lot of things that are really helping that make people feel comfortable to actually buy on the mobile, which just wasn't there before.
No, that's absolutely right. And I think, yeah, as technology evolves, consumer behaviors change, especially you'll especially see it in the younger generations. And it goes back to the point we made earlier. It's about ensuring that all stages of that customer purchase journey, more and more, they're being addressed through technology, and, you know, payment technology has to remain agile.
Yeah. Well, I think we've covered quite a lot there, and I think we've had a good discussion. Is there, just before we wrap it up, is there anything you want to cover, or and also maybe tell people about if they are interested in working with yourselves, where they can find you?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it's been a great conversation. I really thank you for your time. I think if, you know, people interested in working with Addy, and, you know, we're very open source. We have an awful lot of data online. At Manchester, you know, we do everything as a culture. We pride ourselves on our culture, really, in that we have to do the right thing by all of our merchants and our clients. And we tend to do that better face-to-face. And the reality is, people who listen to this may not necessarily be kind of local to either our London or our Manchester offices. But if you are, you're always welcome to come by and see us. Otherwise, yeah, you can find us on the website. We'd be really, really happy to talk to you.
Yeah. And I think you run quite a few events, good events as well.
We do.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I think, you know, you touched on a really important point earlier. I think payment is changing, and sometimes it is a little bit of an education around what's possible. Because if you've been working with older legacy platforms for a long time, you may not be aware that there's a different way to think. And we're really happy to bring people along to events and talk about those. And we, as I say, we run multiple events, and we go to multiple shows every year. And we're always happy. In fact, we love just hearing the customer stories rather than our own, because that's what really excites us, hearing what customers are trying to do and then understanding how we can help.
Yeah. Well, great. Well, thank you so much for your time, and thank you for coming on the podcast. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you.
Say anything, Ian?
Yeah, awesome.
Yeah, no, that's great. No, I definitely echo that last point. So I think that what I've noticed about when we've been talking to you with some of our really complicated client projects is that you've got a can-do attitude, whereas a lot of the other legacy platforms don't. You know, they won't change. They're not interested in investing. So I think that's cool.
Yeah.
Awesome, guys. You have to be, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much,
cool,
guys.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks, guys. You.